Welcome to Life and Lattes with Paula, Andy and Lisa. Three friends, one table and you. Sit down and let's get three cups deep.
Good morning. Welcome to our show. I'm Paula Levine and I'm here as always every week with my girls, Andy Sartovitz in Renana and Lisa Kramer also in Renana. They are sitting on Zoom together and I really have FOMO. I wish I was actually with them or they were with me. L'chaim, we've all got our cappuccinos and I hope that you do too. I hope you've got something warm and cozy. But if you're in Israel, I hope you have something nice and icy. Join our table. WhatsApp us 061-895-1019. We would love to hear from you on the show today. Today, we are getting three cups deep into the stereotypes that somehow we feel we have to live up to, both men and women, and particularly men, because we spoke about men last week. And it's lovely when men come up to me and they tell me that they love our show, because my husband said, no, it's for ladies. I said, it's not for ladies. I've got a lot of guys who listen, including my Uncle Maya. Shout out to Uncle Maya. No, but also not family. Yes, we have lots of male listeners and they are very, very curious about what we have to say. And so today we are going even deeper into the topic of the stereotypes that keep men stuck and the traditional gender roles or traditional roles that, you know, we feel we have to live up to. And are they keeping us from actually connecting with each other? Just a funny little anecdote that I was on Facebook and I saw this video of a guy cleaning his house. Okay. A guy cleaning his house. He says his wife has just had a baby. She's 2 weeks postpartum. She's gone to visit her mother and he's going to clean the house. And the video is literally him washing dishes, putting clothes away and putting the toys away. The video got 132,000 likes. Okay. I don't think that Tembi or Ida, my helpers, ever got any likes for, and they got a lot of love from me, but they never got any likes for cleaning the house. But even in countries where you clean the house yourself, since when has any woman ever got 132,000 likes for cleaning her own house? Okay. Also, 5,000 comments. What an amazing guy. What an amazing dad. And I'm not saying he's not amazing, and he is amazing. But isn't it amazing that that is amazing? Okay? Like, what are our standards? How low has the bar fallen? So we will be unpacking that later in the show. But first, let me say good morning, Andy. Good morning, Lisa. How's it, girls?
Good morning.
So stunning to be with you.
Good morning. I really did have a very special morning, actually. And maybe this is something for everyone to actually take away as well, because I learned a lot from this little experiment, which wasn't an experiment, actually. When I was studying my coaching qualification at the Adler Institute, I had a remarkable mentor. She was literally unbelievable back then and has subsequently become even more amazing and very, very well known. And has written several books and lectures around the world. And she was recently a guest on two podcasts that I was listening to. And I was blown away by her interviews and decided to reach out, send her a message and tell her that I've just listened to two of your interviews on two different podcasts and I love them. She wrote back to say, Andy, it has been so long. I would love to see you. Meet me for a walk on Wednesday morning. So early this morning, I went to go meet her. We had an hour's walk together. She gave me a physical copy of her new book. We had the most amazing hour. She is still so insightful, so wise, so knowledgeable, so inspiring. But it actually made me think, like, hey, we should reach out more when you hear something amazing. Tell a person. Don't just think it. And then invite the person to actually like connect with you and spend time with you. And it happens. And it was amazing. And I absolutely loved it.
I love that. That's so stunning. And newsflash, Andy has acquired another book. Okay. Right, we're going to take a break and we're going to come back with Espresso ourselves.
Chai FM, your station of choice since 2008.
Welcome back to our show. And oh, I love that that story ends, you know, and we really should. We really should reach out. I actually just wrote an article about aging and about how the social circle does shrink, you know, as we get older. I mean, and that article was about like much older age. But the point is that this lady, Dr. Kerry Bernat, said, you know, reach out to people. Reach out to people that you've lost touch with. Reach out to people that impacted you. People love to know that someone was thinking about them. They're very flattered. And she says you might kiss a few frogs, but you might also reconnect and build a beautiful friendship. So I love that. And I love that Andy's got yet another book. Lise, have you got anything to share?
Oh, I do. But mine is like literally the opposite, because like I have a 10-year-old son who is the youngest of five, and he has socialization oozing out of his pores.
I'm a witness, because I was at her house the other night.
Cannot handle not being a part of anything. So he has this group of friends and they hop on their bikes and they go to the parks, which I know for South Africans sounds like totally insane, but in Israel, it's a very normal thing. But like that level of freedom that they keep stretching is like really hard. And my rule with him is you have to be back before dark. Anyway, it's now dark and I have a lady's shear at my house on a Sunday night. And we are sitting halfway through the shear and I'm sweating a little because I realize he hasn't come back. And I'm waiting for this kid to come and the shear is quiet and I'm messaging him. I'm saying, call your dad. And mid-shear, there's a little knock on the door. And I open the door and there's my very cute 10-year-old. He looks at me and goes, I can explain.
That's adorable.
It is adorable. Except he's 10 and all I can think about is, how am I going to parent this at 16? Like, what is this kid going to be doing? And he's always got an explanation for this very, very social life that he has, long may it last.
And he's objectively very cute. So that's
I can explain. That is so adorable. Yeah. Oh, beautiful. Actually, anyway, we went to a park yesterday. It was a public holiday. In fact, today is, I've got to keep telling my brain, today is not Monday. Today is actually Wednesday, because
you have a lot of public holidays.
Yeah, so there, well, we had Sunday, which you don't have. And then that was followed by Monday, which was no school.
Which we also don't have.
And then Tuesday was a public holiday, yet another one. And we went to the park. Now, listen to this. It was a park, like it was just a random park in Edenvale. And there was like a little coffee shop attached, like on the road, like opposite the park. So anyway, we land up, my mother needs the toilet. So she goes and she asks the coffee shop, is there a toilet? Yes, there is. Go through this gate. So she comes back, yeah, it was lovely, very nice toilet. Late in the day, I go to the toilet. I say to the barista, sorry, where's the toilet? He says, next door. I walk through this gate. Now, it looks like someone's house, right? And then there's a guy standing there. He's like, hey, can I help you? I was like, is there a toilet here? He's like, yeah, sure. It's just up this thing. I said, is this like a house? He's like, yes. He's like, I said, is this your house? He said, yes. I said, and you're just letting random people from the park come and use your toilet? He's like, yeah. Okay. He's like, no, it's an outside toilet. And it's just in case people need the toilet when they're at the park. I was blown away. This is this guy's house. And he's got a guest toilet, like, next to his driveway that he just lets random. I could have been a serial killer. I could have been, I don't know what.
Yeah, you look the part.
I mean, seriously. And I just thought that is a level of, like, civic responsibility, of kindness, of, wow, of just, wow. I mean, and then I was telling my sister.
Breaking stereotypes.
Yeah. And I was telling my sister this morning, and she said to me, isn't it sad that that's amazing? It's like that guy's video of cleaning his house. It's also sad that that's amazing.
Now that's objectively sad. I'm sorry.
But yeah, that was that's my espresso myself for
Shame
today.
I haven't met her on.
Why'd you say that?
Andy's husband is the tidiest, cleanest person I know. In fact, when they come for lunch, I get a little bit nervous and I make sure like I've swapped all the sponges at my sink. I'm like, he is the tidiest, cleanest person alive. I would say everyone needs an Aaron, but unfortunately, we weren't all blessed with an Aaron.
Oh my goodness, no, we were not. But we were blessed with Tembi and Ida, so that's makes all the difference. So girls, now, are we ready for our single shot? Andy, have you got something to say for single shot?
Yeah, I was just actually thinking, we were chatting about it the other day, how amazing it is that that 84-year-old man ran the Comrades Marathon.
Oh my goodness. That guy, what was his name? You've got to say his name on radio. Do you still have it?
Oh my gosh.
Yes, I posted it on our Life in Lattes. Oh, you did, yeah.
Oh my gosh.
What is his name? The least he deserves at 84 for running the Comrades is that we remember his name.
It's just like
Johannes Mosella breaks his own Comrades record again. 84. And he has run it multiple times. Yeah,
it's
tell us.
So inspiring and so unbelievable.
No, that's, I mean, how many kilometers, Comrades? It's like 90.
90. It's like the oldest ultra marathon.
My goodness. That is just incredible. That's beyond. My single shot is something very random, but I do a lot of reading on my phone. And I read this study that talking to yourself aloud is actually very normal. I don't know if you guys do that. Do you do it?
I have a staff meeting.
I do that all the time, but I thought it was my sign of craziness, and I just accepted that I was a degree toward crazy.
I've also always thought I'm crazy, but as a new study that says it's healthy. Yes.
It's more than healthy. If you want to reframe something, if you address yourself when you're talking to yourself by your own name, so it's not just you now talking to yourself, you're talking to yourself in third person.
Yes.
Try it.
Okay. So that's it. So talk to yourself. And it also says that it's very self-regulating. It's very self-regulating.
Well, the only question I have is because I've done that since I was a child. But it was those moments where I was doing it and I realized my lips were moving and people were seeing me talk to myself. And then I thought, well, I am a degree of crazy.
I hope
it's not my touch of the tism, but
I think I'll caveat this by saying do it in the bathroom with the door closed when you're looking at yourself in the mirror.
I think I'll do it when I'm walking. I have noticed I start to talk to myself.
I also talk to myself. In fact, and then, it's like, it's funny. Like sometimes I'll be in Woolies and I'll be looking for something and I'll say, oh, I can't believe they don't have this again or something. And then like, I'll see like someone at the end of the aisle just looking at me. I'm like,
You're very good to talk to yourself. Sometimes you need expert advice.
Andy. Oh, my God. I love you, Andy. Sometimes you need expert advice. We're going to come back after the break.
Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
So welcome back to our show. And I think it's time to get three cups deep. But one more little aside is I have made a breakthrough. I have bought myself an alarm clock on Takealot, and it is now sitting next to my bed, and I am using that to wake me up in the morning instead of my phone. So my phone is away in my office, and I don't have to look at my phone at night. Okay, this is day one. I love how I'm like so like, now I'm really going to have to live up to this one.
Talk to us in a week, Paul.
I should talk to you in a week. But I mean, it's a breakthrough. This was Lisa's idea earlier in the year. And Lisa, thank you so much. This show,
Lisa,
honestly,
who doesn't do this yet, and
Lisa, do it.
Really needs to.
I'm like a self-righteous ex-smoker of one day. I mean, I actually also quit vaping because of the show. It's been 6 months, but I mean, I've had my phone in my office for exactly one day, and now I'm like already the know-it-all, telling people how wonderful it is. I got a good night's sleep, and I ordered on Takealot.
At least your alarm clock came, because I have a really, really funny online shopping story where last week my sister-in-law ordered what she thought from the site was this gorgeous Lilo bed that you can put in the pool, and it's massive and it's gorgeous and big. And guess what arrived in the package?
What?
A pillow.
A poster of the Lilo.
Oh, that's happened to me, literally. That is so funny. That actually happened to me. I ordered my husband
a poster of the Lilo.
I can't believe that. That is mad.
Yeah.
That happened to me. I ordered I ordered my husband a drum kit for his birthday, and I ordered what I thought was a mug with a picture of a drum kit on it, saying, you know, whatever, married to a drummer or love drum, whatever, something like that.
And
the drum kit came, but the mug didn't come. So I phoned them and I said, what happened to the thing? They said, no, everything was in the box, all ordered. I said, but there was no mug. No, it was a sticker. the sticker to put on the mug, okay? And I'd thrown out the box with this useless sticker as well. So you got to read the fine print. You really, really have to. Okay, we do have to fix the sound because these girls actually are laughing, but nobody can tell when I'm talking. So I've mentioned this on the show before. I do sound a lot like I laugh at my own jokes, but we're all laughing together, I promise you. We are going to do something about fixing the sound on the Zoom so we can all talk at the same time and laugh at the same time. But for now, we are about to get three cups deep into stereotypes. So, Andy, what do you think are the stereotypes, particularly, let's say, in the workplace? Because you do a lot of executive coaching, business psychology. What is keeping men stuck in the workplace that they simply are not doing? It could be the smallest and easiest thing to do, but they're not doing it because they think they have these expectations of them that because you're a man, ...
Yeah. So the workplace is very, very fascinating when it comes to masculinity and vulnerability. What I'm noticing is a couple of things. The first thing is this like silent struggle with confidence because of comparison. So a guy will be, this is what clients have really shared with me. A male executive will be on LinkedIn, looking up something or, you know, scrolling, and will see other colleagues or professionals in his same field traveling at certain events or conferences, winning certain awards, and this feeling of
inadequacy,
unworthy and not good enough, perhaps a bit of jealousy, is a very real emotion, but he won't know what to do with that emotion, and he certainly won't know who to share that with. And
wait, can I just understand something? Because I think, many women would have that.
Sure.
But is the difference that we will discuss it? Like, I'll call my sister and say, oh, I'm having such an inadequate day today.
Yes.
Yes.
Whereas a man
exactly very much so. Very much so. We are very comfortable. Well, we're getting better at it. And again, we are generalizing. But yes, we will pick up the phone and say, I'm having an inadequate moment, or I was upset I wasn't invited to that, or I wish I went to that event and I can't believe they went.
Or everyone's going to Thailand.
I was worthy of that award.
Fascinating, because like I think while men are having their struggles in terms of the loneliness and the inadequacy, like, there's certain things about women that have still not changed. Like, we still have a massive pay gap. We still have women who will not apply for jobs if they don't have all the right credentials. We still have women who won't ask for raises. You know, we had such a funny thing in my family this week. My niece, God bless her, who is this like really, she just goes for stuff. She's like a really, like, she's just a go-getter kid who'll go for things and does things, and she's got a lot of energy. And she goes for stuff. And she went up to my dad and she went, hey, Grandpa, can I take your Tesla for 2 days? And my dad went, what? And she said, yeah, I want to go camping with your friends. Can I take your Tesla? And the whole family was like, has she lost her mind? Like, you cannot ask Grandpa for his car.
If
like,
you don't ask, the answer is always no.
Oh, that's brilliant, Anne.
And I was so shocked that she would even have the gall to ask. But she just looked and she went, well, he could say no and it would be fine.
Totally.
And there was something to learn from us. I think women are still really struggling in the space of asking or equal pay for equal work, et cetera, et cetera. And there is a big space there, but I guess I never thought of the men's space of just that real asking for help.
Even asking themselves before they ask for help, because when he did share this with me, my first question
to the client,
why are you there? Why are you scrolling on LinkedIn? What is the purpose behind being there? Are you there to connect with someone? Are you there to network? Are you there to learn something? Are you there to share something or some research, an article, a blog, something of value? Why are you there? Mm. And he said he's never stopped to ask himself that question.
That's why I need a coach. So,
that's why I need a coach. But, you know, you can sit for a good 20, 30 minutes mindlessly scrolling, not always being aware of the impact it's having on your wellness, on your mental health, and then suddenly feeling lonely, inadequate, not good enough. And you've been comparing yourself to 30 people in your professional space, and then have no one to kind of unload that with. So there is this armor that we're still seeing. It is changing. I'm very, very pleased to say it is changing. But there's definitely the comparison and the worthiness and the loneliness piece.
Right.
Another thing that I'm definitely seeing is the work-life balance. Women speak about it a lot because motherhood often is a primary, you know, field of our life. It takes up a fortune of our space in terms of time and resources and energy. But very few people will reach out to a male colleague or a male employee and really check in terms of how are you, how are your kids, conversations around fatherhood.
Never. They would balance. Never. It's never. Like, just, yeah, that's yeah. So interesting. I never thought about
it's
that.
It's so interesting. You know,
you would never ask the dad, like, how's your new baby?
Sports game. Sure. How's your baby? How's
never.
Fatherhood?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. That's interesting.
So these are conversations that are so normal in female teams or female colleague relationships that are still very unusual and rare in the male space.
And I love what you said last week's show. You said that a lot of the qualities that we've said are female are literally just human.
Just human.
Can men allow themselves to be human, to say, I'm really struggling with this. I actually don't know how to do this. Can anyone? Because with men, there's a stereotype that they need to know what they're doing. They need to be the strong one. They can't be the one to ask for help. How does that show up, Anne?
So my client told me that he pasted this thing above his pin board at work, and it says, you cannot dodge conflict, dodge vulnerability, dodge hard conversations, and also have a close and trusting relationship with the team. The two things cannot coexist. Avoidance is incompatible with intimacy.
That's exactly it. And Lisa, I'm sure, has got a lot to say about that, because it's not just in the workplace. Obviously, it's in marriage.
Sure.
It's in relationships. If you are avoiding the vulnerability, if you're avoiding those, you know, sharing what's going on for you, if you are disconnected, you are not connected. Lise?
I think that's the basis of male-female relationship. And it's literally its greatest downfall. You know, my most shocking thing for me was when I had a very good friend say, she really doesn't think that the person she would be most vulnerable with, like that she would tell the most vulnerable parts of herself to, would be her husband or vice versa. And like at some point, I think that becomes the blockage of our connection. And men's tendency, and I think if we could change this, we'd change a lot of marriages and probably the workplace, is to shut down. And the shutdown means that the other person is left mind reading or guessing and totally disconnected from you. Mm. Even though it's completely protective, it becomes the very thing that becomes our destruction.
Mm. You know, I have a client on that very note at work who was diagnosed with a condition, and took him almost a year and a half to share it with his team. Now, bear in mind that your condition impacts everything in terms of your capabilities during the day, and you are spending a minimum of, let's say, 10 hours a day with various team members, and you're not going to share that.
Gosh.
You're not going to let them in.
It's so isolating. Well,
what's fascinating is if we go to, I mean, it's even almost scary to say, but if you look at adult suicide rates, the suicide rate amongst men is 75 to 80% higher
than women.
Than women. Which is, I mean, it is a shocking, appalling, scary, scary statistic. Mm. And when we're talking about male suicide, we're often talking about suicide that comes out of the blue that no one saw coming. which means, you know, we have to look at why is that happening. And I think men have a tendency to talk sports. They have a tendency to talk work. They have, you know, but that real thing of being able to connect in vulnerability and to appease loneliness doesn't happen.
Yeah.
And when that absolute sense of loss, devastation, I don't know where to put myself in the world kicks in, a lot of men just can't handle that feeling.
Yeah.
And it's becoming a catastrophic statistic, which
that
means
is,
we have to start addressing it.
That's catastrophic.
That's really scary.
Yeah. I actually read a blog the other day by Dr. Linda Friedland. Do you know her, Liz? She lives in Australia. Okay, that's a dumb question. Do you know Jane? She lives in you lived in Australia. You must know her.
You lived in Australia.
No, so Dr. Linda Friedland, she's actually South African. And she does a blog on aging. And her last blog, she said that 75% of suicides in Australia are older men. And again, comes out of nowhere. Nobody knew how lonely, how much they were struggling, because there's just the thing that boys don't cry. But also, it's not only that. It's that men seem to feel that they have to put on this bravado. They have to know what they're doing, even if they don't know what they're doing. Because they look weak. They look weak. They look like a girl. I don't know. Yeah.
Like a girl is a very good thing, actually.
I know.
It's just interesting because when I first used to have a look at agendas and how team leaders run their team meetings, it was very much what are our tasks? What do we have to get through in this upcoming meeting? What are the objectives? And there was no moment of, hold on, before we actually dive into today's agenda, can we just take 5 minutes to really connect, to just check in? Human first, absolutely. Mm. Like, what is the climate in the space? What's everyone feeling? What's everyone's energy levels like? And I remember the looks that I got of total horror of, like, we have deadlines and we have pressure and we don't have time for cute little team building games until we tested it out. And I was like, well, don't take my word for it. Let's test it out. Let's take 5 minutes at the beginning of every meeting to do one check-in. And it can be fun and it can be totally non-threatening and it doesn't even have to get personal. And we started off with really funny things, like we'd put an image on the screen and everyone would like comment on the image. And then it developed into everyone take out your phones and share with the team the last photo you saved in your gallery. And it landed up being hilarious. Someone showed themselves at the gym and someone showed their food, this burger that they were eating, and someone showed a view from a hike they did on the weekend. And it created all these gorgeous, like, me too moments of like, oh, I also love hiking. I also just got a dog. I go to the same gym or, you know, and...
What is it about connection that's so powerful?
So the connection builds safety and trust. And when you start to see people beyond their role, beyond their job description, beyond the task, you get to see the human side of them. Now, when we need to be brave or take a risk or try something new, or I have to ask you for support on a project, I see you, not just your role or your brand or your identity or your job description. And it is so much easier to connect with you or ask you for help or brainstorm with you when we've both just shared that we got a new puppy or we've both just shared that our kids play in soccer teams or what, you know. That connection is a real thing. And at the end of the day, human beings we may have different values in terms of our definitions of our values, but there are certain universal principles or universal needs like belonging, like mattering, like significance that every single human has, no matter who they are or what their gender is.
But where did men learn, Liz, that they need to disconnect, to protect that vulnerability? Why is it more common with men than women?
I don't know if it's our natural expressive forces that for women to be soft, gentle, intuitive has always been accepted hunter-gatherer, right? Men go out and do the difficult and women nurture and raise. I don't know exactly where it's coming from. Maybe if I explored some anthropology, we'd get there quite easily.
Mm.
But what I do know is we have to look now and say, how's it working for us and how's it serving?
Mm.
You know, we have a massive... massive issue emerging amongst male youth right now. I don't know how far it's touched South Africa. Israel's certainly a little bit behind on it. But if you look at this emergence of this idea of toxic masculinity, you know, right now, there are statistics flying around with due to social media and screen and additional shutdown and dropping in social skills amongst our kids. That you have some boys, the statistic of boys who have hit 25 to 26 years of age and never gone through that scary moment of asking a girl out. But, you know, you end up with this whole movement of boys. I don't know if you guys have explored the manosphere or influences that are starting to emerge, like this absolute bohemian Andrew Tate, where boys are literally being taught, let's go back to being totally authoritative over women and violent almost, and just being these powerful men in the world. And this
and
whole
taking what they want. Yeah, it's
take
so
what you
toxic.
Want and tell them. And it's really scary. I mean, there was even a crazy Netflix series, I'm sure you heard of it, called Adolescence, which was all based on this idea, right, of this toxic male stuff emerging from the internet. And it's coming from the same place, right? Which is boys desperate to connect and desperate to be vulnerable, but with no skills to learn how to do so. And so to combat that, they overcompensate, right? So we've got this scary, scary, crazy movement happening on the other side. And then in our normal lives of saying, like, if we can hit the point that connection happens in vulnerability in the workplace or at home, we're just going to start changing the world. I really believe that.
And I love what you said last week about, you know, when you are met with someone's vulnerability or someone sharing what they need to feel safe or what they'd like or what their wish is or what their dream is, it's not necessarily your job to click your fingers and fulfill that wish and to make everything nice. But it's simply just to be there, to hear it, to hold space for it without, you know, criticizing or dismissing or attacking or whatever we do when sometimes, and that's hard. That's hard to actually make a space for another person and take yourself out of that space and just make that sacred space. I think that's what Hashem does. That's what Tzimtzum is. That's what Hashem does, you know, to create the world. He creates a space for us to be. And we need to do that in relationship. We need to do that, you know, just take ourselves out and hear it. Yeah.
Most of the time, people aren't looking for us to fix something for them. Believe it or not, I know a lot of men think that's true. Let's just solutionize, right?
Yeah.
But think of therapy. No therapist worth their salt in the world is going to fix your life for you, right? Friendships. Most of what friends do, particularly amongst women, is we go blah, 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 blah. I feel so much better, right?
Yeah.
Like, we're actually pretty resourceful. We can figure how to do stuff fairly easily on our own or ask for help. Like, that's the nuance of just what to do.
We just don't want to feel alone in doing it.
Right. And that's the piece that I think men are often missing. Mm-hmm. And I hope that that's changing. But I think we're seeing the flip to the other side and back again. And maybe we'll find ourselves somewhere in the middle.
Let's come back to this.
Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
Welcome back to Life and Lattes, and I've got a WhatsApp here from Carol. I'm really enjoying listening to you lovely girls, from Carol. So thank you for that, and please do reach out, 061-895-1019. We really would love to hear your thoughts. What stereotypes are holding you back? You may be a man, you may be a woman, but what is holding you back? I think we've talked about the workplace and how hard it is for men to say, I need help with this, because they feel
and
somehow...
And that I don't know.
Or I don't know.
That I don't know.
They feel like it's...
a man not to know.
It's like compromising their masculinity for some reason. Now, that is just absurd.
And I think... But I think there's like something on the other side that I'm struggling with. Men should discussing my 10-year-old son. You know, in some ways, there's this like very fine balance between feminine and masculine. You know, when I look at young boys, for example, you know, while I'm very pleased that there's been all this work in schools around bullying and mindfulness and, you know, getting kids in touch with their feelings, what I have noticed is for a lot of young boys, it's come at the expense of like just their dire physicality. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know any of you have had sons, but like my boys needed to wrestle. Like they needed to, and
they needed to be physical.
Yeah, and it was like in our house.
But it wasn't harmful. It was always fun.
Right. And it was like, call me when there's blood.
Yeah. My boys are always, and my husband, they're always wrestling. And it does. Right. I mean, I get so anxious that someone's honestly going to get injured, but they love it. They punch each other so hard. I don't even understand how boys operate, but that's what they do. And they love it. And they need to do it.
And I think there's a space for like good naughtiness, if there's such a thing. You know,
there
in Hebrew it's called shovavi, you know, like where there's playful naughtiness that's not toxic masculinity, that's playful. And in some ways, I think our schools are almost killing it. And the boys, I feel, are like sometimes dying of a degree of frustration, like just needing to go a little bit more wild. Mm.
And then watch their outlet.
They don't have it often, you know, sometimes in sport. But and yet on the flip side, we're desperate for this desire for people to be able to show up, ask for help, get in touch with their feelings, check in with how your day is. And I think striking that balance is like an ongoing challenge. And if we don't get it right, what I think emerges is this very, very toxic masculinity or this crazy narcissism. There is an uptake in male narcissism for sure going on.
In male narcissism?
Sorry?
You're saying,
because what happens, what's the nature? If I go to what's the real, real core of the narcissist is an inability to really self-reflect. Like I cannot see how my thinking, behavior, or speech
impacted
you. Yeah. And if anything, you must have misunderstood or it was your fault, right? And the only way we create men who can do that is men who can be vulnerable, right? Because if I can be vulnerable enough to say, I made a mistake or I got it wrong or I should have asked for help, and that's okay. But if a man can't do that because they have to know or be in charge or whatever, we're going to end up with a narcissist. And there is a massive, massive uptake in narcissistic behavior amongst men, for sure. Or it's just women who are no longer willing to tolerate it. Maybe it's that.
Well, you heard that here on Chai FM by our resident psychotherapist, Lisa Kramer, that there is a massive uptick in male narcissism. Or maybe it's women that are just tired of that. That's crazy. But I want to go back to what you were saying about the bullying thing in schools, because I once wrote an article. I interviewed this guy, Luc Lamprecht, and he made such a brilliant distinction. He said there's mischief, there's mayhem, and there's malice. And he said that schools have become unable to differentiate between mischief.
I love that. And when the system can't differentiate, it becomes very difficult for the person in the system to differentiate.
Right, exactly. And then you have this crackdown and this control, and then you're policing normal, childish.
I think it's sometimes worse than that, because sometimes you have kids who are high energy kids or leaders or playful or mischievous. And they're learning that they're naughty and bad, you know, that they have malice when there isn't any. Best example I can get is my very industrious 10-year-old son, who is the cause of endless grief for me and my husband. But he was playing with a friend.
But he has good explanations.
Right. He can explain. No, it's bad when you're like, Rafi, I need the story from A to Z. Please don't miss out the middle, like the whole story. Hey, Mom, Mommy, it's fine. It's not a big deal. But there was one time where he's playing with his friend and the friend came and knocked him over the head. So Rafi's tough. So Rafi went and wrestled his friend to the ground. And he got in massive trouble because as he was wrestling his friend to the ground, the principal saw, obviously.
Obviously.
So obviously I get a phone call and Rafi's got a detention end-to-end. So I happened to phone the mom of this kid and I said, listen, did your son say anything about what went on today? She said, no. I said, well, could you just ask her? And so ask him. So yeah. She asks him. She says, Lisa, they had the best time. They were playing a game. He doesn't know what I'm talking about. And so I had to phone the principal and say, I don't mind you punishing my kid if there was malice.
Yeah.
I love that word.
Yes.
But mayhem is absolutely fine.
Mischief, could we cut him some slack? Otherwise, he's going to learn he's the naughty kid of the school. Yeah. And then I've got no chance. And I'm already struggling as it is, you know.
But labels.
And I think when kids become naughty, then they also shut down, right? Mm. Which is exactly the thing that we don't want boys to be doing. We're trying to create a world where men can start to show up. I guess it's a dance. I don't know. It's a really...
And an unpeeling of some of these labels, because these stereotypes and these labels are very sticky. Mm. And the problem comes when once you have the stereotype or the label, then you don't perform against it.
Mm, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. And it's those become self-limiting beliefs. Someone posted the other day, it was probably you, Anne's. I think it was you. A belief is just a thought that you've repeated many, many times over. Was that you? It was on your positive recharge group. If you're not on Andy's positive recharge group, you really should be. But I don't know how you join that. Find her on Facebook and ask her.
Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
You are back with Life in Lattes, and we are nearly at the end of our show, but I want to reflect on something just for a moment before we go. When we were planning the show, Lisa was saying, you know, women are saying, men, we want you to be vulnerable. And there's part of it that says, okay, let's do this for the woman in our lives. But actually, she also said, do it for yourself. Do it for yourself. It doesn't have to be for the woman in your life, or if you're married or not married. Be vulnerable, because that is what you need. That is what we all need as human beings, is to share where we're at with another person. And even if it's hard, even if it's sad, even if we're not in the best space, and that vulnerability will, you know, all it needs is to be met with someone who says, I hear you, I'm here. They don't have to fix it. And, you know, that's another stereotype, that men are always trying to find a solution. Women will share what the issue is and the man will try and fix it. And that never goes well, ask my husband. But, you know, the thing is that you don't need to fix it, but you just need to be there. And, you know, so we don't have to do this thing called life alone. And that's all it is. That's all it's about. So that is actually all we have time for. Craig is gesturing wildly at me. Craig, do we not have time for a quick poem? No, we do not. Okay, go home and Google If by Rudyard Kipling. Such a powerful poem about masculinity and about being a man. And tell us what you think on our socials and our Facebook, on Chai FM's page. And thank you so much for listening. Thank you, Lise. Thank you, Andy. We'll see you all next week.